I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cuts in on the right foot. Launches a golazo!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound! Goal!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and brought to you in part by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It's been a weird day because we haven't had a World Cup match for the first day since June 10th. It's July 8th. I actually had to double check and look on my screen because I could not remember what day it is, because that's what this World Cup has been like. We're down to the final eight. We will get set for that as we go tonight, but this is the first opportunity that we've had to really dig into the U.S. men's national team, because Monday was a pregame show, and hopefully you guys had a chance to check that out ahead of the match. Not a fun match to watch. I know a lot of you did. I'm very curious to see what the final overall ratings are going to end up looking like. I think it will be spectacular, because that's what this tournament has been. But the U.S. elimination does leave a little bit of a sour taste on what was a great summer. Last night, we were a little wrapped up in the Argentina win of chaos that happened here in Atlanta. So this is our first chance to really dig into the U.S. men's national team. And I kind of like that we didn't do it straight away, because we get a chance to let it breathe a little bit. We get a chance to, for better or worse, hear some other takes out there about what we saw this summer from this team. And I was able to draft in some reinforcements for this, a voice that many of you who have listened to the station over the years know. Jarrett Smith, joining all the way from Utah. What's up, Jarrett?
I'm doing well. It's 2 hours earlier for me, so it's not quite my bedtime. So you've caught me at a good window. So let's do this.
Yeah, and I did not send you any notes, anything, because I didn't want to really constrict where this conversation goes. You and I have talked soccer in this country, 2014, 15, somewhere in that ballpark.
12 years, give or take.
Yeah,
Sitting around a darkened office and complaining about things, yeah.
Yeah, and that happens, and that's part of the conversation, and I think there's been a lot of the complaining about things since the U.S. lost. It wasn't
to be fair, that was 2014. We were doing that. That was the peak in the Jurgen Klinsmann years.
Yeah, and I've seen some revisionist history, especially after the loss to Belgium this time around, that 2014 was better than this, and I have to say that is so far from the truth. The result doesn't tell you what the entire summer was like. And I think that's been my biggest takeaway, is I've had some time to let this marinate and think about it. One bad performance, and it was a bad performance. There's no way around it. It's a bad day at the office, a bad match. They did not play well, and they didn't play well from the jump. And it happens to every team in the world, and they had no answers to change it. That's frustrating when it's the biggest game of the tournament for this team. But that bad performance doesn't wipe away three very good to great performances and one meaningless game that the result didn't matter. Those games happened. People who are now, revisionist history, there are a lot of people who are reverting back to last summer and talking about how this team's unlikable and these players aren't any good and blah, 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 when literally a week ago, everybody around the country was in love with this team and this manager and everything going on. Can we get to a point ever that we stop the whiplash effect whenever a result doesn't go a team's way?
I don't know that we will, and I think that's the benefit of doing this a couple of days on and not just doing it immediately, because all the nerves are raw at that point. You are just stuck in this kind of feedback loop of doom where you feel like nothing that had gone well matters because of how it ended. And it's a process for just about every team. Who's going to go again? Only one team goes home happy. Some are more upset than others at the end of the day. But I think giving it a little bit of time to breathe helps, because, yeah, the initial reaction was really harsh. And I know it was harsh for me, Jason. And it took me, shout out to my child who was like, who convinced me to go out and get frozen yogurt. as kind of like a calm down. It worked beautifully. 10 out of 10, highly recommended that you let your child talk you into frozen yogurt to come down off a disappointing soccer match. I learned something new Monday night. I think for me, Jason, it was because you had those great performances and you got to where I think was the bare minimum. You needed to make it to this point. That for me, I'm speaking for me. I needed them to get here. Mm-hmm. If they had done more, I'd have been great with it. I needed you because I expected you to do well in your group. I expected you to have a favorable matchup in the round of 32 and a game you can and should win if you are the professional team that I think you are, of adults who are growing and maturing and handle those moments. You hit a wall here. Now we need to talk about how you respond to it. And unfortunately, that we can't measure that response in 48 hours. We can't measure that response in 6 months. We're going to have to figure it out over time, man.
Yeah, it's I think bare minimum is not where I would be with it. I think round of 16 is where they should have got to. And I know for historically, and I think some people don't understand that things change, the FIFA rankings are actually pretty legit. There are a couple things I might quibble with here and there, especially as we've seen the summer go. But your top four teams are the best four teams in this tournament. France, who jumped to number one after a reconfiguration of their rankings for some reason during the tournament. France 1, Argentina 2, Spain 3, England 4. That's correct. Brazil's 5. They went out at the same round that you did. Morocco 6, they're still around. Portugal 7, they went out at the same round you did. Belgium's 8, remember, 8. The U.S. is not. The Netherlands 9, they went out. Same round. Mexico, out. They were number 10. Well, they went out. Same round. Colombia, they're out. They're 11. Germany 12, they're out. Croatia 13, they're out. Switzerland 14, they're in. I was a little surprised.
Italy, surprised.
Yeah, Italy 15. We haven't seen Italy at a World Cup in a long time. And this is the point, in my opinion, for where this is. If you're the U.S., ranked number 16 in the world, that's a bunch of teams ahead of you in the rankings that are also out. There are some teams that have overperformed. Norway, who is climbing the rankings in a pretty big way, honestly. They're impressive what they're doing. There's a lot of teams that wish they were still at this point, and they're not. And you're not this utter failure because you went out in the round of 16 where other teams have also gone out that are allegedly better than you. This is the point that I made on the morning shift the day after the match was comparing the rankings. If you were talking about a college football playoff game where number 16 Virginia lost to number 8 Texas A&M, would you be overreacting about Virginia losing to that in that game? No, you wouldn't be. You would expect it. I don't know where the expectation came from for the U.S. to roll Belgium. That was never anything we talked about. That was never anything that I think anybody who knows these teams said. I think you need to be careful about like the gambling side of it, because from all the reports, the house did pretty well in maybe misleading some people, and a lot of people did not do very well individually. And maybe that's where it came from. I don't know, because otherwise I don't get the reaction to losing a game that sadly is at a minimum a toss-up because you have home field. And in terms of the talent level between the two teams, the U.S. was the underdog. They weren't supposed to win this match.
It's a Belgium team that that took a hammer to your face a couple months ago in a friendly. But I think for me, Jason, it's not the result. It's not the idea of, oh, you should have beat Belgium, you know, 3-1 or, you know, 2-0 and dominated them and asserted your presence with authority, so much as Belgium. Look, Belgium has not been good in this tournament up till this point.
Nope.
It felt like you had a Belgium team that is very much, look, Belgium's on the back end of their golden generation trademark. A lot of those guys are gone. Some of them are still there, like Mario Fellaini, Witzel's gone. Kevin De Bruyne, I think, might actually play till like 2045. I don't know. I mean, he might only play like 20 minutes a game, but he'll be there.
Same for Lukaku at this point.
Dude, well, Lukaku keeps like the absolute redemption story that we haven't really talked about after Lukaku at the last World Cup, where he could not hit water falling out of a boat in a knockout game, and he's been coming off the bench and just being captain clutch. Yep. Like, I know we're very much in our feelings right now, and we are very salty about a lot of things Belgian with that game. Take a step back, and the Lukaku come up has been really a fun thing to watch from a neutral perspective. Yeah. For a guy who looked absolutely lost not that long ago with the national team. But with the United States, Belgium had struggled in this tournament. The U.S. had looked good. They had handled adversity. It's not the result that disappointed me, Jason. It was that they didn't look like they were up for the moment. And I look, this is the first time that this group has been in that situation. Yeah. Where they've had to deal with those moments, and it is a gut check thing. You learn a lot about your guys. You learn a lot about yourself in those moments. Whether or not you have what it takes to, when you get back to that moment, you're going to learn from it, or are you going to suffer it again? You learn a lot about yourself in something like this. I was disappointed because I hoped that they would be more up for those moments, be more up for those 50-50 balls, for those kind of street fights that happen in little moments in the game. That doesn't define everything, but I want to make sure that I'm separating out the result from those moments that disappointed me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was disappointed in the way that they played. I was trying to think about how to explain this properly, because it really frustrates me when the base criticism of a team that loses is they didn't play hard or they're not trying, that sort of thing. And that came up a lot. I had messages sent to me that were saying stuff like that. I saw it all over social media. And I was trying to figure out, because, look, professional athletes don't decide to go into a game and not try. That's just not how they're wired. That's not how this works. But I'm trying to like quantify why it comes across that way. And I don't think it's people just being mean. I think there's a reason to it. And what I kept coming back to that was different in this game and different in other games where I've had those kinds of things said that I've disagreed with, I think it comes down to control, and it comes down to when the U.S. didn't have the ball and couldn't do anything about that, people look at that as not trying. And that's not the case. I think at times you do have to drop off and get organized and try to get your wits about you. It's like a boxer who gets stunned. The U.S. was unable to do that. We'll talk more about this on the other side of the break, but the U.S. was, in my opinion, getting pushed around, and they couldn't find the response. And it's not that they didn't want to. It's that Belgium played very well to control the game, and the U.S. couldn't find a way to break that up. We'll try to figure out some of the ways that maybe they could have broken that up. What is the legacy of the summer for the U.S. men's national team? And anything else that comes up in our conversation. We're talking World Cup. We're talking USA. We're talking soccer. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, and we'll be back on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
To more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Welcome back. Atlanta Soccer Tonight. It's live. 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Jarrett Smith joining me this evening. We're trying to give you some real talk about the U.S. men's national team, not stomping and yelling and not creating, I think, arguments that we can't solve right now. And I mean, I have seen everything from they lost because of pay to play. No, not quite that simple. We'll talk about development here in a second, because I think there's also some very outdated takes when it comes to that. I want to talk a little bit about what comes next. Mauricio Pochettino is out of contract. He has a contract in front of him. If he wants to come back, I do not believe any changes have been made in that situation by U.S. Soccer. I think they would be happy to have him back if he wants to take that contract. Would you be happy to have him back, Jared Smith?
I would love to have him back if he wants to come back.
I would too.
I know there was at least one article that was released today talking about how you can't bring him back, and I can't. Like, I don't know who you're going to get right now that is going to be a better fit. Like, look, he came in halfway through the cycle. Mm-hmm. I feel like coming into it, look, I know that U.S. soccer, we love more than anything on this planet to go as high as possible or as low as possible after every single friendly, mm-hmm. not cup competition friendly. And felt like coming into 2026, this team had hit their stride, where I thought you were blending together the fact that, look, this is a really good technical side.
Yep.
You know, we saw what happens when the technical side gets disrupted. They don't have an answer. Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the mouth. But I also thought he was fusing together some of that grit that we are used to seeing from the men's national team and kind of creating that synthesis where I think you had a little bit of one or the other for the last few cycles. And this felt like it was coming together. He hadn't been here for a full cycle. I'm traditionally a very, my coach gets a cycle. Same. And then I'm changing out the oil. I would, if you give him another cycle, that's 6 years. And for me, that's about my limit where I'm at that point, I'm asking the bartender to cut off. I would be more than happy to have him. Hopefully he does stay, because of where we are in the club window, the clubs, the big clubs that Pochettino would command, they're not available right now. And unless he wants to go chill out and do what the kind of Tata thing that Tata used to do, where he can go put his feet up in Argentina, wander around some of the club facilities, and hang out with friends and drink mate, unless he wants to come do that, I want him back in the office in Atlanta. In south of town.
Yeah, I do too, because I think for the first time ever we saw a style of play from the U.S. at a World Cup that was progressive, not reactive. I remember a certain German manager that a lot of people have, again, played revisionist history on, who talked a lot about being proactive and not reactive. And if you look at the numbers from that 2014 World Cup team, that was the most reactive team that we had seen from the United States since 1990. I think that has changed over time. I think Greg Berhalter's teams were more progressive, and I think Mauricio Pochettino's team was by far the most progressive, the most proactive team that the U.S. has ever fielded at a World Cup. I want to see where that can go with more time and more development, because I think it can be the building blocks of a style that is uniquely U.S.-based. Because it blends together the things that I've always wanted to see blended together. The natural athleticism that I think you have in this player pool with players growing up playing multiple sports and having access to multiple sports, and that gives you a different kind of profile of a player from this country in a lot of different ways. I think you have a wide selection of different kinds of players from this country as well because of the diversity that the United States has. I think you also have a very intelligent player pool because of education, because of schooling, because of opportunities in those realms that are linked to soccer. And it's not purely a college soccer thing. That's just a soccer thing and a U.S. education system thing. I think you have a lot of things that you can build around. And Pochettino did that by, like you said, blending some of the grit, and I think a different kind of grit, maybe a little bit more of that Argentine kind of grit. Also, technique and flair, more flair than we have typically seen from a team. I mean, Malik Tillman, I think, led the tournament in back heels, it felt like. It is a team that I want to see grow, so I'd love to see him back. I think big picture, you know, for me, the U.S. lost to Belgium. They didn't play well on the day, but ultimately they lost because they're not as talented. Belgium has more talent. There are, if we're going to look at the rankings, 15 teams, and I don't think any of the 15 ahead of you have less talent than you. And there might be a couple teams that are behind you in the rankings that have more talent than you. I've long said this is a top 20 team in talent. To get to the top 10 is really the conversation to have, because that's where you see changes. That's where you see more things you can do. And more situations where you don't play your best, but you can still find ways to win. That's not an overnight thing. I think when we look at this, and I know you and I have had these conversations before, Major League Soccer is changing the game in this country extremely quickly. And there are other professional academies too. USL teams are now stable enough in some cases to have academies that are free of charge for kids to play. The top end of talent is getting seen and getting noticed, and they're getting into professional academies more than we have ever seen in our lives. Is it just a matter of time before we get more talent, or are there other things in your mind that you would like to see?
I think time's always going to factor into it, because I think it's really hard to predict these generations, man. Like,
yeah.
I know it's a very common thing. This is not, let me preface this by saying this is not a criticism to anyone who writes these articles, because I think they are very valuable. And I think they're really valuable to look back on, not to trash and say, oh, this person is an idiot, they don't know what they're talking about. No, they're a great time capsule to show us how things change. But I do enjoy the articles of, like, what does the 2030 team look like? We don't know, because 2 years from now, we don't know what it's going to look like 2 years from now. We don't know who's going to take a step up, who's going to stall out. Jason, if I had asked you 3 years ago, hey, Yunus Musa looks like a lock for a World Cup starting spot, you'd have said yes, probably.
If you had asked me 3 years ago about Yunus Musa, I would have said, yeah, he's probably going to be in this World Cup roster. And if you had asked me about Alex Freeman, I would have said, who is that?
Like, that's because Alex Freeman was trying to make the academy in Orlando, if I'm not
probably
mistaken, Miami.
Just starting to get into OCB a little bit. Like, yeah. That's what changes. I mean, Xavier Gozo played his way into a conversation that I didn't think he was ever realistically going to get into, because he hadn't even played for the team yet or been into a camp. But he played his way into that with great play at the beginning of this calendar year. is he going to be in the group in 4 years? I hope so, but you never know. You just don't know where this is going to go.
And to your point, the thing I want to be really careful about is where guys go.
Yeah.
I want to stress how cool it is to be able to say so-and-so went to a top club in a top league. That's great. It looks great on paper. It might look great on salary. And if so, more money to you, get paid.
Totally.
Get the bread while you can, because your body is your tool in this sport. You can only do it for so long. Then you got to go get a different job. Mm-hmm. But I want guys to be careful going to places where you're going to go to a big club and they're going to farm you out for 4 years and your development's going to stall because you're going to be playing for like some third division club playing on a cow pasture somewhere in like, I don't know, like third division Sweden or something. I don't know, man. I'm just picking a country out. I'm hoping that we get smart and stay smart about where guys make these moves, especially as they leave MLS. So you don't end up with a situation like a Matt Turner, who looked like your starting keeper and went to Arsenal, didn't really play, nope. Stalled out, regressed, yep. Finally comes back. By the way, today he's signing another loan to stay in New England. But coming back to New England, starting to find something that he had during that year where New England set a points record, but he didn't have it when you needed him, which was the World Cup.
Yeah.
And Matt Freese passed him, not because Matt Freese, achieved the avatar state, but because other people stalled out. And I don't want to see that, Jason.
No, I want to see guys play, because a club next to your name on a roster doesn't mean anything if you're not actually seeing the field. And that's critical. And I think we've seen maybe in this tournament more than ever that if you're playing in MLS versus being on the bench somewhere else, play in MLS. It's about playing. And every situation is different. Every individual is different. I will touch on this really quick because I think it has become, and it always does, I think there's two things that always come up in this situation. One, what if our best athletes played soccer? And I think you have to be really specific in that conversation. It's a throwback. It happens all the time in these situations, and I get it. I do not think it is just a blanket statement that applies anymore. I think it is, one, more great athletes are choosing to play soccer now because there is a future in it financially, which wasn't the case 20 years ago. Now that's different. People see Lionel Messi everywhere. People see not just Lionel Messi, Christian Pulisic everywhere. They see these advertisements. They see these opportunities, and they say, you know what? I can be cool and play soccer. That's changing. You go back to somebody like Chad Ochocinco, who was a very good soccer player, and he made the choice to focus on American football. Worked out pretty good for him. Maybe that kid now doesn't necessarily make that choice. Maybe Alex Freeman had that choice. I don't know how he was as an American football player, but sure, with his dad, he was probably at least around it. Maybe had that opportunity. He chose soccer. So I don't think that is a barrier at this point. Now, the other one is pay to play. And I saved this for the end of the segment for a reason, because I don't want to belabor it, because I feel like it is way too easy of a catchphrase to throw out there that then you don't have to have an answer to. If you want to actually give more kids the opportunity to play, then we're having a different conversation. The best players, the best kids, the old adage that there is some kid somewhere that U.S. soccer doesn't know. I'm sorry, that wasn't true 10 years ago. It's definitely not true today. Because you have probably 30 to 50 professional soccer academies that are out there finding the best talent. And they do not care about people paying them money to play, because they are developing talent for the professional game. They don't care how much your daddy makes. That's not the deal anymore. So that argument doesn't matter. if you want to have the conversation about, okay, the 50 best kids in every birth year in every major metropolitan area, you want to know who they are. We know who they are. If you want to broaden that and go to the best 500 kids in every age group in every major metropolitan area, okay, we can have that conversation, because when you get to the back end of it, yeah, there's probably some kids who are having to pay a lot of money to play on a third or fourth team at a club, and they're not getting the true development process that they deserve. That's a conversation we can have. That's a real one. Though, that's late bloomers. That's guys who come out of nowhere and then become professionals. That's guys who very well probably go through the college system. That's a different conversation than the national team. We do need to do something about that. It needs to be more accessible for kids to play. But the top end of talented kids, they're getting a chance to play. That's not the case anymore. And I'm sorry, it hasn't been the case for a while. There's no mysteries out there in terms of talent that is hidden and we never find them. Doesn't exist when you have so many professional teams that can make a lot of money by developing that talent and then selling that player. So that's one that I hope, if you really want to do something about it, there are ways to do it. But let's not make that the fix for the national team. That's the fix for keeping more people in the game for longer periods of time. It's a whole other conversation. We'll have plenty of those once this World Cup's over. But coming up on the other side, we're going to go deeper into this conversation. U.S. men's national team. What is the legacy of the summer? What is the takeaway? What did we learn? And what's next? We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. More Atlanta soccer tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
And now we end the night with a bit of structure.
Shot! Goal!
Let's get the formation set. It's the 3-4-3 on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Final segment here on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Jarrett Smith joining me for the show tonight. It is the 3-4-3, and we're going to do this a little bit differently than normal because I still feel like there's a lot of things to jump into. So we'll see if we can get through the entire formation. But I want to talk about three players quickly from this summer and kind of give a final take on their summer. One, let's talk about Phalerin Balogun. And not about the red card and the suspension that was suspended and all of that, but what did Phalerin Balogun show for this program this summer, in your opinion, Jared?
He showed me that you have a striker. Like, we talked about Jason three years ago. We didn't know what this would look like. The U.S. national team was juggling 3, 4, 5, 6 different strikers, waiting for someone to grab it. Phalerin Balogun took that opportunity, and he looked like someone who can be the guy. And yeah, honestly, let's not talk about the suspension fiasco and all that, but let's talk about the way he reacted to it on the field when it happened, after it happened on the field, coming back out, going and talking to the Belgian coach, saying all the right things. He conducted himself in such a admirable way and has talked about wanting to be a good impression for kids. Phalerin Balogun's checking all the boxes, man.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you've got a striker you can build around. I think you've got quite a few players you can build around. Midfield, Malik Tillman. He was a player for me that I don't think we were talking about very much coming in. He wasn't playing a ton at the club level, and he became right alongside Weston McKennie. I feel like it's a toss-up between the two of them for the overall World Cup, how they performed. Tillman maybe edged it with how he played in the knockout rounds. Tillman was brilliant.
You found somebody who can strike a dead ball, man.
Yep.
Like, and the stress you put a team under when you know that someone on the other side of the ball can strike a dead ball that well. And it's not always going to be perfect, but he can put it in a dangerous spot. And like his goal against Belgium is a direct result of that, because you know he's going to put it somewhere dangerous. So you're going to try and do everything you can to get in front of it. And sometimes it deflects and good things happen when you create danger, man.
The last one in this section, I want to say something on Christian Pulisic real quick. I don't know.
A lot of things on Christian Pulisic.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of people have said a lot of things, and a lot of people are just, I don't know if the memo went out or it's what, and it's just.
It's not all mean. It's a spoiler alert. It's not mean.
No. It's gotten really weird around him. And the thing I want to say is we have to remember how he looked at the beginning of this tournament, because you saw him against Senegal in the pre-tournament friendly. You saw him against Germany, and you saw him for the 45 minutes against Paraguay. Nobody was saying anything negative about Christian Pulisic. Not one person anywhere in the planet was saying anything negative about Christian Pulisic. Then he got hurt. Then he didn't play well and got hurt again in the last match. Did I miss something? Like, did he go kick somebody's dog when he was hurt and miss time? Because, man, the things coming out. Yes, he had a bad first half of the calendar year in Milan and didn't score a lot of goals. That's true. Yes, he might be a better player in a team like Milan where he's not the focal point. Yes, maybe he's not the alpha guy. Well, I seem to remember Lionel Messi wasn't the alpha guy for a long portion of his career either, and he grew into it. He was the alpha guy on the field, but he wasn't the alpha guy in terms of wanting that. Listen, Christian Pulisic is a very talented player. He's also physically the kind of very talented player that's going to have an injury history and going to have problems with injuries for the rest of his professional career. And that's something you're going to have to manage, and that's something he's going to have to manage. But man, can we stop with the forgetting what you saw against Senegal, against Germany, against Paraguay, and acting like those games didn't exist? He was playing very well, and he got hurt, and he never got back to where he was playing that well, and then he got hurt again and couldn't run. And I'm sorry for the people who want to throw the thing out there about you would have had to do whatever, you would have had to drag me off the field, blah, blah, blah. Well, I would have dragged him off the field because he couldn't run and you were losing in a knockout game. You didn't have a choice.
Just go ahead and tell everybody that you're going to go after him no matter what. And it doesn't really matter, because if he had tried to stay on the field and limped around, Belgium was in his best game. He wasn't good in the first half. Like he looked rusty. He looked like he just wasn't in the flow of the game, and the whole team looked like they weren't in the flow of the game. But yeah, you can do the you'd have had to drag me off the field. Okay, great. If he had said, I'm not coming off, then you'd have yelled at him for staying on the field and being selfish and hurting the team in an attempt to come back. If you're determined to find something to get angry about on him, you're going to do it. So I don't know, man. Like, for me, a lot of it is, and I'm not Christian Pulisic, but a lot of it for me is, like, at this point, it's water off the back of a duck of people are going to find something to go after him about because he is – that guy. And I agree with you. I don't think he needs to be that guy. I don't think he has the.
I don't think he enjoys being that guy, but
he got anointed that in 2018 because he looked like at times the only competent attacker you had when you were trying to scratch and claw your way into World Cup qualification. And everybody just decided in that moment that snapshot was going to progress a very specific way into somebody who now we are 8 years down the road, Jason. He's not the same human being. He may not want to be that guy, and someone else may want to be that top dog, and that's fine. Let them be it, and just let the man be who he is, which is, I think, a very good player, but not necessarily needing to be the focal point.
I think there's a difference between being the best player and wanting to be the focal point, and that's a conversation that's complicated, and I think it's something that really suits Christian Pulisic in his situation. We're not going to solve that issue, But man, I think a lot of people are being really I don't know if anybody can, because only one person is Christian Pulisic, and only one person knows how he thinks and what he wants and what has affected him and what hasn't affected him. I think this is getting ridiculous with now pulling out quotes from things he said on a documentary that was done about him because he is a star. And yeah, people were unfair to players in this team before. And just because they had a bad match against Belgium doesn't mean you get to be unfair to them now. It's really annoying. Four things in the 3-4-3 really quickly. I just want to like kind of lay out a little bit of what the next 4 years look like for this national team, because you're going to have to qualify. That's one of the biggest things. More teams out of CONCACAF qualify than last time you went through it. It won't be a situation where you have the hex and you have to go to Mexico and get a result and all those sorts of things. You might not even play Mexico in World Cup qualifying. But World Cup qualifying will help this group of players going forward. And it won't be the exact same group. There will be changes. Guys will emerge. Guys will fall out. That's what happens in every World Cup cycle in every country in the world. But qualifying will help them be a little more battle tested, because they'll go to places like Jamaica. They'll go to places like Curacao. They'll go to Panama. They'll go maybe to Mexico, maybe not. Depends on how the system works this time around. But qualifying will be a huge one, because you got to do that to get into the tournament. The CONCACAF Nations League will get you games against good CONCACAF teams. That's where you'll play Mexico in games that matter. That's where you'll play Canada in games that matter. You will get good games in that, and that should be a trophy that this country every time wants to win. The CONCACAF Gold Cup will be another one. That is very important. That's even bigger than the Nations League. That is a miniature World Cup with some of the ebbs and flows of it, and that's very, very key. Again, you should want to be the best team in CONCACAF, and you're going to have to beat two good teams in Mexico and Canada to be there. And then you're going to have to hold off very good teams nipping at your heels, like a Curacao, like a Haiti, like a Panama, who all went to this World Cup, like a Costa Rica who didn't make it, like an Honduras who didn't make it, like a Jamaica who didn't make it. CONCACAF is better than ever before, and it will help you. But the number one thing in terms of competitions coming up for this team, sounds like you're getting another Copa America coming up in 2028, and it sounds like it's going to be in the United States. And you have to make a better run of it than last time around. And no, Greg Berhalter is not the reason why you made a bad run of it last time around. Tim Weah punching somebody in a game and getting sent off is what affected you.
I forgot about that.
Yes. And you lost the opportunity to play big knockout games that would have helped you this summer if you hadn't had that red card and lost to Panama in that match. That's what changed a little bit of this trajectory. You get Copa America in 28, make the most of it. That's the most important thing on the calendar. All right, we always end with three things that make us smile. I'm going to ask you, Jarrett, something about this national team this summer that has made you smile.
Sebastian Berhalter. Look, I cannot imagine the psychological weight that goes from being Greg Berhalter's kid because of the toxicity that exists around U.S. soccer fandom and around your dad and the last however many years you've dealt with it. Sebastian Berhalter is just a beautiful encapsulation of what makes me smile about the U.S. men's national team. He is someone who looks like he might rip off your arm and beat you with a bloody end if you have the ball and he wants it. He's going to work. He's going to get stuck into tackles. He's going to run, and he's going to make things happen, whether it's goals, whether it's assists, whether it's a tackle, whether it is making the unselfish play for somebody. Sebastian Berhalter's come up in MLS, we talked about before, Jason. He's come up with the national team as being somebody, not necessarily who's going to be in the starting 11 every time, but a member of that squad and a guy who's carving out a career for himself is delightful.
Give me one thing about the tournament as a whole that has made you smile.
It's watching this gap between the okay teams and the good teams be so small. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this ad nauseum. That gap is so small that Belgium, USA notwithstanding, so many of these games have just been breathtakingly nail-biting. Even if the scoreline didn't reflect it, the games felt balanced. And it has made for some insanely drunk sporting events that we've gotten to watch. I know you suffered yesterday. I had to do a welfare check on you, and you could not give me a positive or a negative if you were alive.
I didn't know for about an hour after that game.
But so many of these games have been an absolute delight because that gap is so much smaller. Teams that were lower have risen up and have closed that gap. I don't necessarily know if it's those top teams falling so much as some of those lower teams closing that gap and making such fun events for us.
Last thing for me on things that have made me smile, and I'll keep it focused to the U.S. national team. I had a conversation with somebody today who was very young in 2014, and I look back at that World Cup as a watershed moment for the game in this country because people got to experience watch parties and things really in the first big way because games were being played at 6-7 o'clock at night. It was a spectacle and it was huge. And he was telling me that like he had a group of friends when he was a kid in the neighborhood that they watched those games and now they get together to watch games today. You have a whole bunch of more kids who've had that experience this summer with this national team and they want to be Alex Freeman and they want to be Christian Pulisic and they want to be Folair and Balogun. And we're not going to see the immediate effects of that the next cycle. I think we're going to see it in 12 years. I think we're going to see it in three World Cups and the game is going to be in such a better place. That's where we will see the legacy of this U.S. national team at a World Cup. The legacy has also been that we're doing Atlanta Soccer Tonight every night until the final, and we'll be back tomorrow night. France and Morocco play at 3 o'clock tomorrow, I think. It might be 4 o'clock. The times are really weird. It's going to be in the afternoon. It's a huge game. We'll break all of it down tomorrow. We'll get you ready for the rest of the quarterfinals. Y'all have a good rest of the evening. Adios, everybody.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.